This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, three-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
People were upset yesterday about somebody had done, I can't remember which publication it was. They did like kind of the head-to-head matchup, but it got a lot of play because they did the head-to-head matchup of who favored who at whichever position.
Yeah.
And they had Schwarber over Yuli at first base. And people were understandably upset about that because Yuli was the batting title championship. But Schwarber was better in a lot of the power categories and what have you, you know. And in this day and age, you give a stat nerd something, and if the advanced stats win out over batting average, they're going to give it to the stat nerd side, to the power side. But this is the thing: Schwarber's garbage as a first baseman, like as an actual catcher of the baseball. So in this game, where the Red Sox, mind you, who have a history of making horrible fielding errors in big time games, Sean. Sure, we're going back a couple decades there, but I think that nothing would make me happier if this game was decided by Yuli making an incredible grab at first base on an errant throw or something.
Oh, that would be beautiful. The same way they closed out the season and clinched home field when Yuli was scooping over at first base. I saw that same breakdown that you did, Seth. I think where they went position by position, and the Red Sox came away with more advantages. They went all nine positions or all eight positions, DH, and then starting pitching and bullpen. I think the crucial thing in that is that whoever was doing that gave Boston the advantage in both areas of pitching. Without McCullers, could be accurate. Here's the way I felt, at least about the everyday players, is where they gave the Red Sox advantages there. I think they won out on catcher, first base, third base, and center field. I'll put center field aside because that is an error.
These weren't your positions that are... They were minuscule advantages when it comes to the offense.
That's
like you had a guy that was a little bit better than another guy who either, like in the case of Yuli, is good offensively, and God, my God, we need the pendulum to swing back with Yuli.
Yeah.
Or a catcher where it's not as big a deal.
Yeah, here's how I felt about it, especially first base, third base, and DH. They gave the Red Sox the advantage at DH, and I looked at those and I said, okay, my players at those three positions are Yuli, Bregman, and Yordan. I feel fine about all three of those guys. Like, they're saying J.D. Martinez advantage over Yordan. Okay, fine. I mean, like, I guess, but I feel like Yordan has just as good a chance of having a dynamite series as J.D. Martinez does. Bregman was an MVP runner-up a couple years ago. I get it that Devers gets the advantage because he put up big numbers this year and Bregman's been hurt. Bregman's been fine in the postseason. He looks great. Yeah. So I have no problem with Bregman. Like, I don't feel like, if you're asking me, would you trade Bregman for Devers in this series? No, I wouldn't. I'll take Alex Bregman right now with this team. And then at first base, you're right about first base. Like, Yuli has to start hitting. Like, we can't have this stuff where he's 1-for-12 going into game four, and then the two hits he gets in game four are a squibber infield single and a bloop hit to left field. Like, Yuli needs to start doing things that are in line with somebody who's won a batting title.
Yeah. But I mean, overall, you're right about just the even matchup.
Yeah.
Just even in terms of just look at it with a broad stroke. OPS, the Astros were second in the AL this year with a 784, whereas the Red Sox were third with a 777. You know, it's just they're very evenly matched across the board in a lot of respects. I wonder why 538.com was so bullish.
Well, the first thing I wonder is, have they factored in the McCullers injury yet?
Right. They definitely haven't. I'm guessing they're just going with whatever they know at the time. I would imagine they hadn't.
Yeah.
And that's probably, if I weren't so lazy and actually went to the article and just instead of reading my beloved Astros County tweet, I could tell you that.
It's crazy when you think about it, Seth. Okay, so if McCullers can't go, I mean, think about this. Think about going into an ALCS. Think about the starting pitchers that the Astros have gone into, the front three pitchers that the Astros will have gone into the ALCS with the last four times. Like in 2017, it was Verlander and Keuchel and probably either McCullers or Morton, depending on how you felt about each guy. In 2018, you had Cole, Verlander, Morton. In 2019, you had Cole, Verlander, and I guess who would be the and Greinke. You had traded for Greinke at that point. Even last year, you had Greinke, who was still close to being Greinke. You had Fromber, and you had Lance. You could be going into the ALCS this year with Fromber, Luis Garcia, who is still technically a rookie, although he's got postseason experience, and Jose Urquidy, who also, while young, has postseason experience. I mean, that's a scary thing. Even just purely from an experience standpoint, you were at least going into these other postseasons with guys who'd had at least two who'd had postseason experience before. You know, Keuchel and Verlander in 2017, Verlander and Cole and Morton, and then Verlander and Cole and Greinke, and then Greinke and McCullers. You're going in with three guys who, while they've all pitched in the postseason, they've never been guys who are being asked to do what they're going to be asked to do in this postseason. How crazy is that? I mean, it makes you feel good about the future, right? Like, these are three guys that you got under team control for like four more years. But it's a little scary that these are your three guys that are going to be spearheading your rotation if there's no Lance there.
Yeah, I guess it's just that maybe I'm unnaturally cocky, perhaps, about...
Have you been drinking this morning?
Yeah, I've been drinking a good amount. I don't know. How is it different for Urquidy, I suppose, and when you're saying he's never been asked to do something?
Well,
like
I'm just saying none of these guys have ever been asked to be a hoss. I guess Urquidy's the closest thing to being asked to do what he's going to be asked to do, which is be a third starter, probably.
Uh-huh.
But like for Fromber and especially for Luis Garcia, like this is a big ask of Luis Garcia to be your number two starter when your number two starter the last 4 years has been Cole or Keuchel or Greinke.
I mean, I don't worry about Urquidy because he's got a good chunk of playoff experience and actual World Series experience, so the stage or anything isn't going to be as daunting. What I've said all along, Sean. And, Lance McCullers actually tweeted this a couple weeks ago in a different context, but we are spoiled, and we've been spoiled at various times by this Astros team where in 2019, they were one of the best offenses of all time. Well, guess what? They lost the World Series. And we had some of the best defense of all time or some of the best pitching of all time, and you still lost the World Series. And every team that goes into these series doesn't get to have like historically great this or historically great that. Sometimes it's just a better, more well-rounded team. So I think everything you say about this pitching is valid. It's not like there's obviously the teams that you faced last year or the years before in the World Series, the ALCS, had more formidable and more name brand starting pitching than we have right now.
Yeah.
It's just this is the obstacle they'll have to overcome if Lance isn't there.
Yeah, your margin for error just gets reduced. And in a sport where it comes down to like, and this is going to be a series that's going to go six or seven games, margin for error matters. All right, so we had Tapera talking junk about the Astros earlier this week. Ryan Tapera, Brazoswood High School alum. We've got another former Houstonian who is throwing shade at the Astros as well. We'll have that audio for you. We will also have the audio of the nuclear weapon that we're going to unleash on this particular Red Sox pitcher next.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast, presented by Allied Home Security.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. The Astros get started tomorrow. Game one, 7 o'clock, Minute Maid Park. Going to be a lot of fun. Astros and Red Sox, keeping an eye out for some Lance McCullers news. In the meantime, there's a trend developing, Seth, and the trend is this. pitchers for teams that are opposing the Astros that have ties to the Houston area, for some reason, have a bug up their butt about the Houston Astros. Ryan Tepera, for whatever reason, thought it would be a good idea to poke the bear in the Chicago White Sox series by essentially accusing the Astros of still cheating in 2021. We saw how that worked out. The Astros decimated the White Sox 24 hours later. Now it's Nathan Eovaldi, and I've not heard this yet. I've only read the quotes. So I always liked, I'm with you. I think you and I are similar, Seth. I like to, as opposed to just reading the quotes, I like to at least be able to hear them, if not see body language that goes with the quotes as well. But this is an auditory thing. It's radio. So Nathan Eovaldi, who's from Alvin, he is one of the starting pitchers for the Red Sox. Good pitcher. He was on the Greg Hill Show on our sister station up in Boston, WEEI. And in an exchange in that appearance, here's what Nathan Eovaldi had to say about the Astros.
Prior to your start in Game 3 of the 2018 LCS against the Astros, Bregman trolled you on Instagram showing the back-to-back home runs they hit in June of that season. Is there a team, I mean, do you hate this team more than any other team in baseball, even though the Yankees are kind of the rival? I mean, they seem to rub everybody the wrong way.
Yeah, I mean, they have a tendency of rubbing guys the wrong way. I mean, I don't necessarily hate any team, but, you know, they're not high up on my list. But, I mean, hey, it happens. You know, I give up three homers back-to-back-to-back, but we were able to come out on top that, that series, and hopefully we're going to be able to do it again this time.
All right, so I hear that. We had a lot of people texting us, hey, guys, see the comments Nathan Eovaldi made? He then did blah, blah, blah.
Here's the thing, yeah. Sean. They do have a lot of guys that rub people the wrong way, and we like them for it.
I can totally see.
Like Correa, the way he's been really since the cheating scandal, he is the being better than everyone else scandal.
Yeah.
He's been the classic guy that you love when he's on your team, but you hate him when he's on an opposing team.
Right.
Because he's got his teammates back, and he's going to step up and say what he feels needs to be said.
Yeah.
And you love it as a fan of the team.
Yeah.
But I could totally 100% easily see other players looking at either Correa. Bregman, now you got to remember, that was a young Bregman in 2018.
Yeah.
When asked for comment about Ryan Tepera's comments, this time, Bregman was downright diplomatic about it.
Couldn't have been more vanilla. Said, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It was a little bit of a letdown.
A big time. Big time.
So Bregman used to be a lot more brash. I think McCullers used to be more brash on social media and whatnot. Now, he's still as fiery as he ever was on the mound.
Oh,
but
yeah.
He's backed off a little bit on the other stuff.
Yeah.
But Eovaldi, I think probably the damage is done emotionally, and he's still in an emotional turmoil as he's facing. I don't care what he did in the 2018 playoffs. We were taking a break.
For the sake of the truth, I'm glad we played the question. It would have been probably a more caustic remark by Eovaldi if we didn't play, because he was basically set up by the interviewer. You know, like, do they rub you the wrong way? Well, I guess they rub me the wrong way. You know, like, he was kind of set up for that. So this is what we need to determine, Seth, because you and I were ready to take the nuclear weapon that we have at our avail and launch it on Nathan Eovaldi the same way that it's been launched on other people, including you at one time. Do we launch the nuclear weapon that is Clint's mom on Nathan Eovaldi? Here was Clint's mom going after Ryan Tepera and Tony La Russa following the ALDS. Would this be a proportional response to what Nathan Eovaldi just said?
Well, Astros won today. Despite all that mouthing off by Tepera and La Russa and all them idiots. You know, Tepera, he wants to say we're cheating. Before you start talking about stuff like that, you better find out and make sure it's right before you start talking shit about our boys. So since you went ahead and did it, I'm going to have to make me a little trip up to Chicago, wash your mouth out with a little bit of Coors Light. Then I'm going to whoop that ass. Oh, by the way, La Russa, seriously? You want to slander our character because we beat you? Because we hit one of your batters? Nobody ever gets hit when they're playing baseball and that they're in the batter's box. No, not ever. You're just mad because we was whooping that ass. So I think while I'm up there whooping Tepera, I'm going to slide over there and find your ass and whip it. How about that? Go Stros.
Go Stros. Go Stros at the end. I'm not even joking. I think Linda Sterner could legit beat the snot out of Tony La Russa. Like, I don't even think that's a fair fight
I mean, she's a youthful lady, and LaRusso's like cross country skied his way out to the mound there when he was angry because his hips are so stiff at this point. He's like,
youthful. I mean, you know, Clint's in his early 40s.
Sean, yeah. Youthful.
Useful. Right. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, yes. No, Linda's going to come whoop my ass now because of that.
You scoffed at useful. My God, you've got a death wish. Good luck. Good luck starting your vehicle.
I can't even leave the building now. I need security detail.
It's scary. I think. I think Uvalde needs to. She needs to cut one for Uvalde.
She is. Clint just texted me. Clint just texted me. He said, "We're on it."
I'm stuck with. I gave Linda Sterner the advice that she should. And I didn't say this to her personally, but she listens to our show, so yeah. I assume she heard it. I said that she should start a Cameo account where she just basically takes money to threaten to whip people's ass. The problem is, inevitably, at some point, somebody would have no sense of humor about it, and they'd sue her over it.
Yes.
Like over threatening, or this would be better if she didn't get sued, but if they filed a restraining order, then her services would be in high demand if she was actually effective at it.
Oh yes. Yeah. Oh yeah. Absolutely.
She's scared. Honestly, I exaggerated a little earlier when I was saying this, but it was because it came from a place of truth. When she set her sights on me and made the intimidate when she was upset with me for saying that Clint wasn't a good singer or whatever I said.
You said Justin Moore was a flipper flopper.
Let's not bring that up. And so she made a video about me. And I got that feeling in the pit of my stomach,
yes.
Like, oh, boy,
I done
bad.
Okay, let's see. Hang on a second. Okay, so let's see if I can set up a good fight for Linda Sterner here. Here was Ozzie Guillen, former White Sox player, former White Sox manager, now part of that crew on NBC Sports Chicago that's been so ha-ha funny about the trash can banging throughout the season here.
Mm.
Here was Ozzie Guillen on our sister station 670 The Score on Mully and Haw yesterday, talking about what he would have done if he was the manager of the White Sox and Jose Abreu got beaned. Here's what Ozzie Guillen's reaction was.
They hit my guy. Intention or not, we out. We out the playoff. We done. And they're going to hit, and they're not going to do something about it. About protecting his best player, his best hitter, his best guy, the best human being. I disagree with that. If that happened to me, I swear to God, we're still fighting right now. Right now, it's 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock in the morning. Yes.
So there it is. I think, Seth, she's going to fly to Chicago. Linda Sterner is. She's going to whoop that ass on Ryan Tepera. She's going to slide over and whoop that ass on Tony La Russa. And she's going to take the blood that's still on her hands from beating both of them up, like a savage, just rub it across her face, and then drive over to NBC Sports Chicago and whoop that ass on Ozzie Guillen.
You know why and this is the thing, too, is Linda Sterner would have watched Craig Biggio play baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the reason that people in Houston especially were confused by La Russa was that Abreu is like Biggio. He's going to get hit a lot. He just does. You know, he leans out over the plate, and it's just what he does. It's his approach at the plate, so he gets hit a lot. And you don't take it personally when he does, especially when it wasn't like a wildly inside pitch or anything. Any other batter would have moved out of the way for that pitch. So, like Ozzie Guillen, he joins the list of Linda Sterner. We're gonna sick her on or whatever. We'll pig suey her or whatever they say.
right.
We're gonna have her go pig suey on Ozzie Guillen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like that we have this weapon here. All right. Laremy Tunsil is having surgery on his thumb. Just more cap dollars, doing nothing for the 2021 Texans. Now, what exactly is Nick Caserio having to deal with in rebuilding this team? We'll add some context on the heels of the latest bad news on expensive Texans next.
Live from the Twin Peaks Studios, Sports Radio 610 presents Payne and Pendergast.
Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday. Darren Revelle is going to join us in about an hour. Darren Revelle had an interesting day on Twitter yesterday. You and I were just talking about that during the break. He got into it with Keith Olbermann. This Adam Schefter thing is kind of interesting. Schefter having to apologize because his was one of the emails that got at least reported upon in the whole Washington football team thing, where he sent a sent an article to Bruce Allen about the lockout in 2011, saying, "Hey, take a look at this. Let me know if I'm okay on all the facts here." So
yeah, and I guess, but basically, the important and relevant part of that is, for one, Sean and I are not journalists, but we work with journalists, so you pick up a few things along the way. You can call somebody up to fact check, but if you're writing about somebody, you're not supposed to give them the whole interview and say, like, hey, do with it what you will. And it's considered bad journalistic integrity.
Yeah, so Schefter found himself apologizing for that yesterday. Stands by, says, nobody ever took any editorial license with my stories. I was just making sure my facts were straight. So that's feels like more of an inside baseball kind of thing where the journalists are getting more worked up than everybody else.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
I think most people, like, I honestly, when I first got into the business, I kind of assumed that that happened just as a matter of fact-checking. Because, look, as somebody that was written about as an athlete, and I'm not, it's not like I had, I was a superstar athlete or anything, but there's a lot of stuff written about you. I knew how inaccurate a lot of stuff was. So, like, I always would have loved it. As an athlete, I was like, I wish somebody would give this to me so I could say, well, no, actually, you're wrong here and you're wrong here and this is factually incorrect. Because guys aren't, writers aren't doing it out of ill will or anything. They just, it's impossible to be 100% accurate. So I still don't quite get that. I feel like if a guy's trying to write a true piece, by all means, have somebody vet it and tell me where I'm wrong before I put it out.
Yeah, I want to be accurate. Absolutely. Yeah. Here was David Culley yesterday giving the update on Laremy Tunsil and his torn ligament in his thumb.
Laremy Tunsil will be having surgery tomorrow on his thumb.
David, so is surgery mean Laremy's out for the season?
Maybe we're thinking right now it could be 4 weeks. Not really sure, but that's what we're thinking it could be.
Sometimes with thumb injuries, some players play through it. What was kind of the decision to go ahead and get that done?
We felt like it was best for him to get it done now to be able to come back and be able to play for us in a few weeks, hopefully.
All right, so that's the update. So so Laremy Tunsil, at a minimum, he's going to be out for a while before he comes back and plays for the Houston Texans. I may need to poll this thing on Twitter. I do think that there's probably a decent fraction of the Texans fan base that thinks that this might be the last we've seen of Laremy Tunsil, whether it's he's traded before the trade deadline or, you know, this thumb injury starts to linger a little bit. It's there 1-8, 1-9. It still kind of hurts. I don't know. And then maybe he gets moved in the offseason. I think everything's in play with every player on this team right now. Like, I don't think anybody's safe from anything. The one thing that I thought of yesterday, Seth, when it came to Tunsil, is he's one of the most expensive players on the team. And oh, by the way, cap-wise, he ain't all that expensive this year. Next year, kind of like Watson, is when the big money starts to kick in with Laremy Tunsil. So I started looking and I'm going, man, you look at the guys that are the biggest cap hits on this team right now. And I know that there's people out there that have issues with some of the things Nick Caserio has done. You know, he's traded a lot of day three draft capital for a lot of stuff that hasn't panned out. The Shaq Lawson thing I don't think was a great look, where you trade for him, you restructure his deal, and then you've got to move him just because he's either washed or he doesn't want to be here, one or the other. So there's little plays on the margins that Nick has made. I don't expect him to win every deal, obviously. But I think the Tunsil thing is a reminder of the context for what Nick Caserio is stepping into here. I think that needs to be, especially now that we're 5 games into the season, I think that needs to be reinforced that what Nick Caserio is stepping into here, in terms of the cap, in terms of everything, but let's just focus on the cap here for a second, is something that I wouldn't wish upon any general manager in the NFL. I don't want to say that. I would wish it upon general managers for teams that I hate. But I certainly wouldn't wish it on the general manager for the team that I root for. You look at the 9 biggest cap hits on the team for the Texans in 2021. So the 9, in the context of 2021 dollars, the 9 most expensive players, they represent a little over a third of the salary cap. So on a 53-man roster, these are 9 guys who are taking up one third of the cap space.
Mm-hmm.
And of these 9 guys, I think you could argue that 8 of them, maybe 7, 8 are either underperforming, injured, or getting sued by 22 people right now.
Oh, yeah, that little thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'll just go through these quickly, and then I want to get your reaction to it. But these are the 9, rapid-fire style. Deshaun Watson, is the number one cap hit on this team right now. He's not playing. He's demanding a trade. He's being sued by 22 women, and he's an unmovable asset right now, number one. Number two, Laremy Tunsil, we just talked about. He wasn't even playing well when he was still healthy. On Pro Football Focus, 56th out of 74 tackles, if you buy into the Pro Football Focus numbers.
Yeah, I would say, well, no. I think there's some context there. I think, like, he wasn't as good in pass protection as he has been. I don't know how much of that is because he was playing next to Titus Howard, and there were times where I couldn't figure out genuinely whether it was his mistake, a tight end that was supposed to be chipping and not helping out. But in the run, as a run blocker, he wasn't doing well at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think he's still a quality left tackle.
He is. You're just not getting your money's worth right now.
Yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Whitney Mercilus is the third highest cap hit on this team. I don't know how much deeper I need to go than that.
Right.
He's been better this year than he was last year, but last year he might have been the worst outside linebacker / defensive end in football.
Well, and real quick on Laremy Tunsil again is that his cap right now is like way more manageable than it will be next year, correct?
Yes.
Next year is when the new money kicks in on
his
extension.
Yeah.
And it's because it's 9 points. It's a relatively paltry, impoverished $9.2 million right now, but it goes up way more.
It goes up into the teens, well into the teens next year. Yeah. The fourth highest cap hit on this team cannot get on the field. Thank God. His name is Eric Murray. Eric Murray is the fourth highest cap hit on this team right now.
That's the one that makes so little sense. That was maybe... It'll never be the hallmark of the Bill O'Brien general manager era because nobody knows Eric Murray's name, but it's worse than the Randall Cobb signing because at least with Randall Cobb, you could say, okay, he's coming off a productive year in Dallas, and he brings some things to the table from an experience standpoint. With Eric Murray, everybody unanimously almost said, first, wait, who? And second, why are you paying him this much money? Who else was offering him anywhere close to this amount of money? It was one of the weirdest, dumbest signings maybe in the history of salary cap era football.
Yes, it was bad, and he's the fourth highest cap hit on the team. The fifth highest cap hit on the team, and again, Seth, boy, now that I look at this, this is another one where the price of poker goes way up next year on this guy. If you keep him on the team, like Watson, like Tunsil, Zach Cunningham, he's the fifth highest cap hit on the team. And he's going to cost a lot more than $5.7 million, which is what he's costing on the cap this year because the big money kicks in next year. Just for some context with where Cunningham is with this team right now, here was David Culley earlier this week on Zach Cunningham.
His role has been for us on first and second down is where he's most comfortable. When we get into the nickel-type situations, we feel like that the people that we bring in those particular situations fit us better in pass defense. But he's been doing well since he's came back from the one game he didn't play. He's playing well. We need to be playing better. He's a heck of a player, and expect more out of him and along with the other guys that's playing around him.
Yeah, he's one of the highest paid linebackers in football, and he can't get on the field on third down.
What I wish they'd be doing with Zach Cunningham right now? This would be a Ravens tactic more so than a Patriots tactic. I would be designing 10 blitzes a game for Zach Cunningham before 3 weeks ahead of the trade deadline.
Oh!
Where Zach Cunningham would have like four tackles for a loss, a sack, and a forced interception.
You're all about the sizzle reel. The sizzle reel.
Yeah, dude. I'll tell you what. And I say that's a Ravens thing.
Yeah.
For one, the Ravens do a really good job of getting the most out of a defensive player, and then that player going somewhere else in free agency and being pretty average, but because that other team spent a lot for that player as a free agent, they play him a lot, and then the Ravens, 2 years later, get a third-round pick as compensation, as a compensatory pick. But the other thing, back in the day, Rex Ryan used to basically, as a way of getting his players to play hard, be like, hey, listen, when it's your free agency year, we're going to design a bunch of plays for you. You're going to be all pro, and we probably won't be able to sign you, but you're going to go make $20 million a year somewhere else. So, like, for different purposes, there's ways you can highlight a player's best attributes. The problem is I don't think that quite fits the whole competition model.
No, not at all. No, that fits a garage sale model is what that fits. So Watson, Tunsil, Mercilus, Murray, Cunningham are the five biggest cap hits on the team, and none of them are achieving up to what you're spending on them right now. The last four here, Seth, in the top nine, we don't need to spend much time on Brandon Cooks. He's been an actual good player for this football team. He's the sixth biggest cap hit on the team. The last three in this list, David Johnson, who has 18 carries this season so far. I don't know whether to feel good that David Johnson only has 18 carries or horrible that you're spending $4.7 million on a guy who has 18 carries five games into the season. Nevertheless, David Johnson, Malik Collins, number eight, Kaimi Fairbairn is the ninth biggest cap hit on the team and one of the five highest paid kickers in football right now.
They've spent, that's what's so frustrating about the special teams being so bad, is that they pay good money for their specialists, and you know, and rightfully so. Like they're getting paid what I think they would perceive to be worth. I think that at least headed into the season with Kaimi Fairbairn. So that's frustrating that they haven't performed well, and especially when you go out and when you sign a ton of linebackers who are blue collar linebacking type of guys, and you have all these other guys and veterans on the roster who should be more savvy and smarter and better on special teams. They've been abysmal on special teams. Hey, oh yeah, I forgot Andre Roberts.
Yeah.
You go out and get an actual return specialist and he underperforms. That's really frustrating.
It is. Now, of those nine guys I just named, the only one that's on Nick Caserio's ticket is Malik Collins, which I think of, other than Brandon Cooks, of all of them, like, if Malik Collins could just keep from roughing the passer, $4.7 million on a one-year deal, he's probably been okay. He's probably been fine. I mean, I know those roughing the passer penalties, especially the one this past Sunday, was real critical in the outcome of that game. But Malik Collins, my overriding point with all this is to say, like, the Tunsil injury reminds you, because now Tunsil is on the shelf, there's a lot of money being spent on guys that Nick Caserio did not go shopping for. Like, he did not ask to pay Whitney Mercilus $8.8 million this year. He did not ask to pay Eric Murray $7.4 million this year. He did not ask to give Zach Cunningham an extension, a top-of-market extension, for a guy that needs to get taken off the field on third down. So it's frustrating, but I think the ray of light for all this is these are largely fixable things once 2021 is over. A lot of these are still on the Texans' ticket, Seth, because they're unfixable this year because of the dead cap money.
Yeah, so, I mean, and that's where we are right now with it. It's a matter of, okay, how quickly can you get a lot of this off? And really, when do you trade? I mean, so much of it's hanging on Deshaun Watson.
Yep.
It's just such one of the strangest situations I've ever experienced in sports where there's such a huge part of this team that's just receded into the background. And it, even though it looms there, is probably the most critical thing that will happen to your franchise over the next calendar year, there's nothing to talk about. It's just radio silence. Nobody has a damn clue what's going to happen.
Probably the litmus test was, for the first time since we started interviewing Nick Caserio. What have we interviewed Caserio, Seth, you and me? Probably seven or eight times now since he took the job as general manager, something like that. We didn't ask a Deshaun Watson question yesterday for the first time.
Yeah.
That's where we are with it.
And then, you know what? The bigger thing is nobody clamored for a Deshaun Watson question.
Great
usually we would get some kind of like, oh, you need to press him more on Deshaun. Everybody's at the point now where it is what it is.
You know the deal.
And you just got to wait and see what happens.
There'll be
a lot of chatter as we approach the trade deadline.
I agree with that. Especially if Miami continues to play poorly. That's something to keep in mind. Text message, you can text the show, 713-572-4610. Seth, do you expect there will be a significant drop-off in the offensive line play with Laremy Tunsil out now for the next
four weeks? I think there's a good chance that there is, and I know the first reaction to that would be, well, how much worse could it be? The pass protection hasn't been all that bad. It hasn't been great, but it hasn't been nearly as bad as the run blocking, and that's where I'm curious to watch and see with Jerron Christian, who's got a hungry element to him that Laremy Tunsil simply doesn't have in the run game, I think, and that maybe end up seeing the run blocking actually improve because Jerron Christian doesn't have the luxury of not caring about run blocking the way that Laremy Tunsil sometimes looks like he does. The pass protection is where I would worry. I mean, you're not going to be able to leave him alone on a guy like Myles Garrett or somebody like that at all, you know, or very little, if ever. So this week versus the Colts have done a good job versus the Texans in the past of these corner blitzes and these safety blitzes off the edge.
Yeah.
This is where the rubber meets the road in terms of veteran expertise on the offensive line. Matt Eberflus is the defensive coordinator for the Colts. He's going to scheme up some stuff to really test Charlie Heck and Jerron Christian.
Dude, they are stout against the run, too, the Colts are. They're really, like this, like if you're on.
Well, that part I would say, well, so what? Oh, yeah. No, are they going to average 2.5 yards per carry?
You're 100% yeah. Right. No, I guess I'm just, for purposes of Texan fans going, maybe this is the week that they run the football. Nope. Not the week they run the football. Not at all.
I was surprised in the fourth quarter of that game last week when I looked at the run stats and I realized that they weren't nearly as good as I guess I thought they would be in the first quarter.
Yeah.
I thought that the Texans came out in the first half and did some things much better than they had been in the run blocking, and then in particular the execution and the blocking on screens was better than I've seen in a long time. And a lot of it just almost because of game situations and then perhaps a drop-off in actual playing ability in the second half, it fell by the wayside. But there was a glimmer of hope there last week.
Yeah, that was a weird thing about last week's game is you go into that game and you go, well, the Patriots have four replacement offensive linemen and they don't defend the run well. Wow, maybe the Texans can get after Mac Jones and run the football. They did really neither of those things. And still probably should have won the football game. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's what's kind of wild. All right, we head into the 9 o'clock hour. The Astros, they're getting ready for the Red Sox. This offseason, they're getting ready to possibly lose some significant portions of this roster. It turns out one real significant kind of unsung portion may be on his way out as well. We'll let you know who it is next.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.